Welcome to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks so much for listening this week and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson. Well, quite a week here as we talk about politics in South Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis is back in the region today on this Friday. According to the Sun Sentinel, he'll hold a press conference at the Historical Museum of Palm Beach, reportedly planning to suspend Palm Beach County's Supervisor of Elections, Susan Booker. This would be just the latest of several major announcements the new governor has made across the region during his first week and a half in office.
She grew up in Miami. She stayed here in Florida to go to college at Florida International University. We really needed to have a fresh start at the South Florida Water Management District. I have no interest in dancing on Scott Israel's political grave. Just suffice it to say that the massacre might never have happened had Brower had better leadership in the sheriff's department.
Just some of the gubernatorial announcements in the last week and a half affecting South Florida and in South Florida. Just a day after taking the oath of office, Governor DeSantis appointed Judge Barbara Lagoa from Miami to the state Supreme Court. Then this week, he appointed a second Miami judge, Robert Luck, to the state's highest court. In between those, he took action on the environment, signing a sweeping executive order that pledges $2.5 billion for Everglades restoration and, among other things, creates a resiliency office meant to tackle sea level rise. He also called for the resignation of the entire board of the South Florida Water Management District. The other major personnel change happened in Broward County. DeSantis fired Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel, who's been criticized for how his agency handled the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. The governor focusing again on this Friday in South Florida, reportedly preparing to suspend Palm Beach County's Supervisor of Elections, Susan Booker. The governor and the recent focus in South Florida is where we begin the South Florida Roundup. What issue should he take up next in our region? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number, 800-743-9576, or you can communicate with us on social media via Twitter at WLRN. Arlene sent us this note. The governor should focus on affordable housing everywhere, but especially in the Keys. Sandra in Palmetto Bay, I'd like to see a discussion about traffic problems in South Miami-Dade and funding for a metro in South Miami-Dade. Thomas in Lake Worth, I'd like to see him tackle the mistrust of law enforcement we've seen as a result of the handling of the Parkland shooting. And Justin in Dania Beach wants the governor to tackle home insurance in South Florida. Justice also says that he did not vote for Governor DeSantis, but, quote, if he makes substantive moves on environment and water quality issues, that would definitely be a way to gain his support in the future. There you go. South Florida and the governor in the first week and a half, 800-743-9576. We've got several reporters joining us. Sergio Bustos is with the South Florida Sun Sentinel as a deputy editorial page editor. He's with us via Skype. And David Smiley covers politics for our partner, the Miami Herald, with us over the telephone. Sergio, let me start with you. What can you share with us about the announcement the governor making on this Friday regarding the Supervisor of Elections in Palm Beach County?
Well, what's interesting is when you're looking at topics that may that you may want him to take on, I think voting rights and the whole voting system in Florida would have been one. I'm not sure people were going to be crazy over this particular move. He seems to be taking aim at the people and not the problem, if you will. The problem still remains a lack of resources down here in South Florida for counties that have just huge numbers of voters and all sorts of issues come election time just because of sheer volume. But again, I think people want to see something more on what to do about the whole voting system throughout the state. I'm just not sure this is the aim they were looking for from the governor or the move they wanted from him.
The suspension, the possible suspension, reported suspension of Susan Booker. Kimberly Miller with the Palm Beach Post with us. What does that mean in Palm Beach County, do you think, when the Supervisor of Elections has been outspoken, certainly, but outspoken in terms of the lack of technological resources that she experienced during the quick recount in the November election? Kimberly, you with us? Go ahead, Kimberly.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay.
We can hear you now.
Sure. You know, I think we're all waiting to hear what the governor has to say, but I think you're exactly right. I mean, she has blamed it on outdated equipment and a lack of money to update them. I mean, I think people can understand the limitations. And although it was a terrible situation, it seemed like it was excusable to some extent.
So, David Smiley, what's the governor's trajectory here? Within the last week, firing the sheriff, the elected sheriff of Broward County, Scott Israel, and looks like to be suspending the county election supervisor in Palm Beach County.
Well, in suspending Scott Israel, he was, at the very least, making good on a campaign promise. He had said repeatedly on the campaign trail that Scott Israel should be removed, and he's certainly that move has been, you know, very strongly supported by a number of Parkland families who lost students or adults in the shooting, and that went over really well. You know, this, I guess he did telegraph this coming suspension of Susan Bucher in his inaugural, in his inauguration speech, when he talked about not being willing to allow elections officials to create problems in South Florida, generally is the way he put it. But, maybe he's trying to show a strong hand here, a strong executive. In some ways, he's spent the last 10 days, I think, picking off low-hanging fruit that Rick Scott left for him. So some of these moves are pretty obvious, but a lot of them are going over really well. I'm with Sergio. I'm not sure how this one will be received,
though. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the governor's statement to the Palm Beach Post back a couple of weeks ago about the implementation that he thought was necessary in the form of legislation regarding Amendment 4 in terms of restoring the voting rights for felons. Sergio, I think that's probably what you were referring to, right?
Like I said, there's some other bigger voting issues that I think people are waiting on, not something directed at the Palm Beach County Division of Elections.
Yeah. But overall here, David, I mean, a lot of attention paid with these issues in South Florida, maybe low hanging fruit. Maybe it was they were unanswered questions or issues that were left over from the Scott administration. But nonetheless, I think that the governor has spent a considerable amount of time here and has directed his attention at some of these significant issues, certainly one of the largest being the environmental issue.
Yeah, if you look at who he's put in his inner circle, you know, his lieutenant governor, Jeanette Nunez, is from Miami. By all accounts, has a very strong input into the decisions he's making. I'm not entirely clear if that's led to some of his decisions, for instance, regarding Supreme Court nominations and some of the time he's spent here. But he paid a lot of attention to South Florida on the campaign trail, despite the fact that he was never going to win down here. But he wanted to, cut his losses and make sure that he kept his margins. And he seems to be, trying to make good on the pledges he made to voters in South Florida. To some extent, I think this is some of the major problems in the state are just in South Florida, where you have, the major urban areas. Mm-hmm. Going to Southwest Florida, that's where Red Tide is. That's where the tributaries from Lake Okeechobee are, carrying toxic blue-green algae. I think some of it is just speaking to the enormous problems and importance of the area and some of the job that he has to do early on as he, flexes his muscle as the new governor.
Regarding the environment, we asked the audience what issue that they would like the governor to focus on. Elizabeth and Coconut Grove, I want DeSantis to focus on water issues from Okeechobee to Miami-Dade's shores, especially around pollution and dumping. Lancelot in Forest Lakes wants the governor to deal with climate change, writing Florida should develop a comprehensive program to prepare for and to combat the effects of climate change and sea level rise statewide, like we have with hurricane preparedness. David G. in Sunny Isles Beach wrote us, sea level rise and climate change for the new governor. How do we pay for the infrastructure to mitigate the worst effects? Kimberly Miller with the Palm Beach Post, as the governor did make the environment central to his campaign, as it was his first significant policy statement, both as a candidate and as governor, in that executive order was the phrase sea level rise. How significant is that? And I want to ask about the knock-on effect, the actions that he has requested from the South Florida Water Management District, undoubtedly the most important and largest, most influential resource management group in the state of Florida.
You know, I'm not so sure. I think everyone agrees that there's sea level rise. It's the cause. And so we really need, you know, someone to come out and say humans are causing the sea level rise. I mean, you can't argue that the seas are rising.
Right.
That's, you know, scientific fact. So it's really more of a statement if we hear that, yes, it's human caused. Yeah, of course, he made a huge statement on the, 2 days after, you know, he was in office, coming to Southwest Florida and making his announcement on the environmental change or things he was dedicating to the environment. And then the coming to Stewart and kind of dropping a bomb, asking the entire Water Management District board to resign. I don't think they were expecting that. I don't think anyone in the district was expecting that. What there was a meeting that day, and what they were thinking was he was going to announce an appointment to replace one of the board members mm-hmm. who resigned January 1st. So actually, one of the board members went up to hear who that was going to be and was kind of surprised to find out, oh, no, wait, I'm being asked to resign.
Right, asked for a resignation.
Right, and the board member said he wasn't going to.
Right, so that was my next question, is how many resignations have been turned into the governor from that board of directors?
So two after his request. There was one that resigned January 1st before the request was made. She wanted to dedicate more time to her businesses, and then two resigned at his request. There are three seats that are up to, they're going to expire in March, so those are kind of out of the picture at that point, and that he'll be able to reappoint or, you know, make his own appointments. And then the chairman of the board, we have not heard yet what his thoughts are. He has not resigned, but hasn't really said either way what he's doing.
Sergio Bustos, is this a sign of independence from the Water Management District Board or a sign of stubbornness?
I would say maybe a little of both, but we just found it, in writing about this, we just thought the resignation of the district's nine board members, albeit a surprise move, was really refreshing coming from a governor, especially given the last 8 years. We think that Governor DeSantis has set a whole new tone for a governor's office that up until now has essentially told Floridians that we can't afford to, you know, remember the jobs governor, to create jobs mm-hmm. and also protect the environment. And he's making the case that, in fact, you can. And the other surprising thing with him is, you know, former Governor Scott, he cut millions of dollars from his water management district budgets. And that had an immediate impact. And he also rolled back growth management laws, mm-hmm. eliminated the state agency that oversaw them. We find that DeSantis has really taken us in a giant step in another direction. And in a very enlightened kind of way. And I think he needs to be applauded for that.
And Kimberly Miller, when it comes to this specific water management district, the largest in the state, it also mm-hmm. has been seen by critics as being captured by the sugar industry. And as a candidate, Ron DeSantis, was very vocal about not directly accepting contributions from Big Sugar.
Right, sure. And in fact, the whole reason for his request for them all to resign goes back to a November vote where they approved continuing a lease for 16,000 acres to continue sugarcane farming on land that's meant for the Lake Okeechobee Southern Reservoir. You know, it was a very controversial vote that was put on the agenda at the last minute, 9 o'clock the evening before a meeting in Coral Gables, where a lot of people weren't expecting to attend because it was, you know, so far from the normal district offices. So that was really where he ran afoul, I think, of Representative Mast and DeSantis.
Representative Mast helped lead some of the transition when it came to the governor-elect Ron DeSantis, who obviously is now governor. That's Kimberly Miller with the Palm Beach Post. Sergio Bustos is with us, deputy editorial page editor with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. David Smiley covering politics for our partner, the Miami Herald. Your phone calls, 800-743-9576. The gubernatorial focus on South Florida in the first week and a half of the DeSantis administration is where we're at here on the South Florida Roundup. Let's begin in Broward County for the phone calls. Wilton Manners and Karen has been patient. Go ahead, Karen. You're on the radio. Your thoughts.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I wanted to say, and actually the Broward Democratic Party put out a statement about this yesterday, that there's been, you know, and a significant focus on Democratic elected officials here in Broward. And now it sounds like it's going to also happen in Palm Beach County. And to me, this feels like Governor DeSantis is trying to get back at the areas that did not support him. And this is even further because the supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County also had significant problems. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, in Bay County, the supervisor accepted votes by email. Mm-hmm. So why the focus on Broward and Palm Beach? Why the focus on Democratic elected officials? And, you know, how far is he going to take this? And is he trying to, in a sense, scare Democrats in South Florida to get in line, or he's going to suspend you?
Interesting point, Karen. Thanks for that. How about it, David Smiley? What about the perception there that Karen puts voice to?
Well, I think, you know, whether this was political or just coincidence, you know, the first elected official that DeSantis suspended was the superintendent of Okaloosa County, which is far from being a Democratic stronghold. And somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I'm trying to confirm this, but I believe she's a Republican. So, you know, I think that was, you know, probably it was a politically savvy move, whether it was intended that way or not. She had her own problems. But, you know, that was one of the first things brought up when he suspended Scott Israel. So I think, you know, suspending Susan Bucher today in Palm Beach County will definitely add legitimate, I think, feelings from Democrats down here that that Florida Republican leaders have targeted the most Democratic area in the state, that the supervisor of Bay County, as Judge Mark Walker in Tallahassee brought up in ruling on Brenda Snipes' lawsuit challenging her suspension, you know, there do seem to be other actors in the elections process that had problems that haven't or aren't being targeted by the former and current governor. So that, you know, that's something we're probably going to hear Democrats bring up. And it seems like we're going to have a couple of challenges of these suspensions. So we'll see that play out in the Florida Senate as Democrats, you know, get into the process of deciding whether these suspended officials should be currently permanently removed or reinstated.
Maggie in Fort Lauderdale feels similar, it looks like. Maggie, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am wondering about the replacement for Brenda Snipes. It seems to me that Rick Scott made it a point to put him in there. You know, suspending someone who had already resigned, I mean, it made no sense, except when you look at it from a long view, I think that he is still directly what goes on here.
Yeah.
He put this guy in place who has been a wrecking ball with water management as the deputy AG in Palm Beach County and also with Florida Enterprise. I mean, he is a walking disaster.
Got it, Maggie.
We don't know what they're going to do in Broward now.
Got it. This goes back to the appointment. Rick Scott, Sergio Bustos with the Sun Sentinel with this. Rick Scott remove Brenda Snipes and put his former lawyer, the name escapes me right now. Help me out, Kimberly.
Antonacci.
Pete Antonacci, who also happened to be the chairman, served as a chairman of the South Florida Water Management District for some time. Has Governor DeSantis talked at all? Is there any inclination of the administration about how it's going to move forward with the supervisor of election position in Broward County, if they're going to call a special election, or kind of what the path forward there looks like?
Well, right now it's unclear. What is clear, he's been moving at a very quick pace on all these different issues. Now, whether he takes on that issue in Bay County, which would be really interesting, all I could say is, I mean, his tenure is still young. It's only the first week here.
That's right.
So, you know, maybe that's going to happen on Monday. Who knows?
Yeah.
But he certainly is making plenty of news and moving around the state pretty quickly, even in a strange plane, as he calls it, the drug forfeited plane.
The former drug forfeit plane, right, exactly. Sergio Bustos with the South Florida Sun Sentinel editorial page, deputy editor there with us via Skype. Kimberly Miller on assignment, but joining us from the Palm Beach Post, and David Smiley covering politics for our partner, the Miami Herald. All three of you, thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A couple more ideas that came in from our listeners about what they would like the new governor to focus on in South Florida. Christopher in Miami, speak directly to the shutdown and the proposed border wall. Chris in Boca Raton would like the governor to tackle the gun lobby issue or gun control laws. Louisa in Miami, public transportation, wanting to hear about the expansion of 836. Lee in Glenvar Heights strongly use the South Florida county governments to expand rail transit. Two road projects in Miami, Lee writes, are preposterous. Denise in South Florida wrote us in terms of what she'd like the governor to focus on. It would be great if the utilities were not monopolies. Justin in Dania Beach wants the governor to tackle home insurance, Florida. That's another one, certainly. Also talking about Ellen in Glenvar Heights, saying that Ellen would like to have the new governor make Florida a, quote, 100% renewable energy state as soon as logistically possible. Governor DeSantis focusing certainly on a lot of issues in South Florida and in South Florida. In fact, this hour announcing an executive order suspending the Palm Beach County Supervisor of Elections, Susan Booker, and accepting the resignation of Brenda Snipes, the former election supervisor in Broward County. We'll have more on those stories certainly throughout the day and throughout the afternoon here in South Florida. The replacement for the election supervisor in, let's see here, in Palm Beach County is Wendy Link is going to be the new appointed election supervisor in Palm Beach County. We got a lot more to talk about here, including Andrew Pollack. He lost a daughter, his daughter Meadow, in the shooting at Stoneman Douglas High. He started work this week with the State Department of Education, and he continues to push for a new school superintendent in Broward County. We will hear from him and hear from you next as the South Florida Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Days before Rick Scott left office as governor, he appointed Andrew Pollack to the State Board of Education. Pollack's daughter, Meadow, was killed at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School last year. Since then, he's become a high-profile conservative advocate for school safety. He's been a harsh critic also of local officials in Broward County, and he has fought against policies like the Promise Program, the Broward Schools Program, which offers alternatives to arrest, like counseling, for students who commit crimes at school. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman spoke with Pollack this week.
One is the bill that we got passed in Florida, that SB 7026. Every kid now is safer in the state of Florida. There's armed guards, police in every single school now in Florida. More money for mental health care. So we got a lot done in Florida. That means a lot to me.
And anything that you're disappointed that hasn't happened yet?
Look at Broward County. We have that Superintendent Runcie, and he's going to stick to his legacy of creating an unsafe environment for children and teachers by still keeping that Promise Program in place. There could be a better way of doing it. I don't want to see kids have a record if they commit a crime, just by being young and immature, and I don't want to see them staying with that forever. So there's better programs that we could participate in, but his program just doesn't work.
What kind of program do you imagine for that?
I would want to put it in the hands of law enforcement. They're the experts. That's what they're trained to do. And then if the kids are good kids, when they turn 18, you give them a clean slate. That's what I'd like to see happen. Not like his program is. They give them multiple chances. You know, his intentions were well meant, you know, with these programs. But by him doing this social experiment, it cost my daughter her life.
So do you think the Promise Program directly contributed to the shooting?
Yes. It's one of the main factors. It creates a culture of leniency of not reporting and underreporting. The killer, he committed multiple crimes and was never arrested. You know, he trespassed at the school after he threatened to shoot the school up, and he wasn't arrested. You know, he punched his mother's teeth out. The police went to his house over 40 times, walking around the school with swastikas, the N-word on his backpack. That's a hate crime. Bringing bullets to school is a felony. You know, threatening to shoot the school up's a felony, threatening people's lives are felonies.
So you were at Governor Ron DeSantis's inauguration,
yes.
And you were with him again recently when he announced that he was suspending Broward Sheriff Scott Israel.
Yes.
So I wonder, have you talked with him about whether he will approve your appointment to the State Board of Education, since he has said that he's likely going to reject some or all of the last-minute appointments from Governor Scott?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to be okay with Governor DeSantis. I know he's going to be pulling a bunch of those appointments, but even if he pulls mine, he'll reappoint me.
Has he said that to you?
Yes.
We reached out to Governor DeSantis to verify this, and a spokesman didn't get back to us. So after Governor Scott, now Senator Scott, announced your appointment, you tweeted that your priorities would be making schools safer, increasing teacher pay, and holding superintendents accountable.
Yes.
What are your ideas for how to do those things? Let's start with school safety.
School safety is, like I just said, I'd like to go through the recommendations from the President's Commission and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission and see how we could implement them, because they're only recommendations. So I want to see how we could make sure that these superintendents and school boards make the kids and teachers safer. We could penalize them somehow. In Broward, at Ground Zero, where 17 people were murdered, there's no sense of urgency with Superintendent Runcie. So there's got to be ways with the Board of Education to enforce those recommendations.
Do you think the Board of Education should play a role in encouraging more districts to participate in the Guardian program, which allows school staff to be armed?
Yeah, that's something I'm going to look into. I followed it. I was up in Polk County watching the Sheriff's Department all summer long train at the academy. They were training these guardians, and that Sheriff Judd in Polk County wrote the curriculum for that. And I was up there, and I was very confident by the end of, by graduation day, that they would be those would be an asset to have those guardians at any school. In a perfect world, I'd love to have 3 to 5 deputies at every school, SRO, but we don't. The money's not there to pay that.
And would you advocate for teachers to have guns as well?
You see, what people don't get is this isn't a mandatory program. This is voluntary. So teachers, a lot of the teachers that you say, oh, I don't want to do it, or they're so against it. No one's asking teachers to carry. Anyone that worked at the school, a janitor to a teacher, who would want to voluntarily go through this program, I'm okay with it. They're an asset. You know, when your kid's on that third floor, right, and there's someone there walking down the hallway that wants to shoot your kid 9 times, I don't care who has the gun that's going to save my kid. Okay? So anyone that's quick to say they don't want them carrying in the school, they don't have a murdered kid in their hands. And I know what my daughter was praying for on that third floor, for someone to come and help her.
And what about your teacher pay priority? How do you think the Board of Education could influence that, since the legislature makes the budget and school districts are the ones that make the decisions about how much to pay teachers?
Well, speaking with the governor, when we spoke about my appointment.
And here he's referring to former Governor Rick Scott.
He said, Andy, I want you to look into this when you get on the Board of Education. The last few years, we gave the schools over $4 billion more. But I see that a lot of the money's going towards administrators and not getting to the teachers. So that's something that the governor confided in me to look into. And that's why I say better pay for the teachers. But the teachers got to stand up. You know what I mean? They can't go along with these unions that don't have their best interest at hand.
What do you think the teachers' union in Broward has done that has been not helpful for teachers?
This teachers' union in August, with that school board election, went for the same school board members that rubber-stamped Robert Runcie.
You've been very outspoken against Broward County Superintendent Robert Runcie. What were the specific problems or mistakes that you think Robert Runcie made that contributed to the shooting?
Multiple failures at the school, gates open, letting a sex offender work at the gate.
You're talking about Andrew Medina?
Yeah, Andrew Medina.
Andrew Medina was a coach and security monitor at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. To be clear, although Pollack refers to him as a, quote, sex offender, he has not been charged with or convicted of a sex crime. The Sun Sentinel reported that a school district committee investigated claims that Medina verbally sexually harassed Pollack's daughter, Meadow, and another student a year before the shooting. The committee found probable cause to charge him with inappropriate conduct and recommended that he be fired. A member of Superintendent Robert Runcie's administration intervened to let Medina keep his job, which put him at the Stoneman Douglas Gate on February 14th. He was the first to see the confessed shooter enter the campus with a rifle bag and failed to stop him or call a code red. He has since been let go.
When you're a leader, you accept responsibility for the people that work under you. So that's why I'm telling people I'm not going to be done until I get rid of this Robert Runcie, and he knows it. You know, I'm not a pushover. My daughter was murdered on that third floor, and he's responsible, and I'm going to hold him to it.
Is there anything Runcie could say or do at this point that would change your mind?
I'm expecting for him to fall the same way as Sheriff Israel. You know, we took Sheriff Israel out, and he never accepted responsibility. To this day, he's saying he didn't do anything wrong. He had exceptional, amazing leadership with eight deputies that didn't know what they were doing. And it's the same thing with Runcie. He's going to go down, too, because people that don't repent and don't accept responsibility, they go down hard, just like Pharaoh.
Pharaoh
in Egypt.
Oh.
The Pharaoh in Egypt, he didn't repent for all everything he did to those Jews, and God gave him the chance, and he never did, and that's why he got those plagues, and his heart was hardened. And the same, Runcie's going to get the same fate as Pharaoh.
If you're confirmed to be on the Board of Education and Runcie continues as superintendent, there might be situations where he comes before the board. For example, he might ask for approval for a plan to turn around an underperforming school. And I wonder, in that situation, do you think that you could be objective?
Yeah, I could, but he's going to deal with me. You know what I mean? Mr. Pollack's not going anywhere, you know. Like my daughter, she's stuck in that hole over there in the ground, and I'm never going to forget it. And my first priority is removing Runcie from his superintendent job. One way or another, I'll get to Robert Runcie.
You've been outspoken about your political beliefs, supporting Ron DeSantis' campaign for governor and Rick Scott's campaign for Senate, and you're also a supporter of President Trump. The Board of Education is not necessarily a political body. The members aren't appointed per se on the basis of their political party. So do you think your politics would play a role in how you vote as a board member?
I think in general, everyone's politics plays a role as a board member. You know what I mean? But I'm going to do what's right for the community. To me, school safety is nonpartisan.
Andrew Pollack, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas' father and a member of the state of Florida's Department of Education Board, speaking with WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman. She joins us now here on the South Florida Roundup. Jessica, has the superintendent of Broward County, Robert Runcie, responded to the criticism that we heard there from Pollack?
Yes, we asked him for a response, and he said, first of all, that the victims' families are in his hearts and minds all the time. He feels that their pain is fresh, and then this is some of the rest of what he said.
At this moment, the community needs stability in district leadership, and we're moving in the right direction. The school board, my leadership team, and I are 100% committed to keeping the momentum going.
Now, I know the superintendent held a news conference this week as well, answered some questions, had a statement about kind of the district's response in all of this. And we have heard from the governor, Ron DeSantis, some asking, pushing for the governor to take action on the superintendent. Did Superintendent Runcie have any response about the potential of Governor DeSantis stepping into this?
Yes, I asked him about that, and we have that audio as well.
I don't even think about it. I think about the work that I have to do every day. When I get up every day, I think about how are the families and the students and the community in Stoneman Douglas doing in terms of their loss. That's the focus we all should have, from the governor all the way down. How are we going to provide services? How are we going to improve education funding so we can get the resources to help that community?
How does Pollack's role on the Department of Education board now kind of intersect with Robert Runcie? He's a, you know, the superintendent of Broward County, the second largest school district in the state of Florida. What does that look like?
Yeah, so the Board of Education is a regulatory board. So basically that means like the legislature will pass education laws. And a lot of times those laws are kind of big picture. And then they say the State Board of Education has the power to sort of hash out the details. And those details can be, you know, make a lot of the difference of like what education policy really feels like when it's implemented in a school district. So it is a big deal. And also, you know, in recent years, the Board of Education has been actually more aggressive about getting involved in school districts and particularly how they handle like underperforming schools. So they've said, no, you have to fire, you know, this percentage of teachers if you have teachers mm-hmm. that are underperforming. And so one of the ways that this could, you know, this sort of conflict could happen if you have Andrew Pollack on the board and, you know, Superintendent Runcie maybe coming before the board could be Superintendent Runcie might say, oh, I have these five schools that are D schools and here's my plan for how to turn them around. And then the Board of Education would say yes or no. And actually this week, Andrew Pollack was at his first Board of Education meeting. From what I can tell, Superintendent Runcie wasn't there. There wasn't like a representative from the district who was presenting this, but there was a presentation where there were four schools statewide that had already been in this kind of turnaround process where the school district was trying to bring up the school grade mm-hmm. and they hadn't had success, and the school districts were asking for one more year before basically the schools would either close or turn into a charter. And two of the schools were approved and two of them were denied. And one that was denied was in Broward. And Andrew Pollack spoke on it and was like, you know, I know about Broward and there needs to be accountability there. So there's kind of already that tension brewing.
Yeah. And it's going to be addressed with the Department of Education. It's going to be addressed in those board meetings. And certainly it's going to be a focus of the legislative session upcoming in 6 weeks, which is the next response after the State Commission on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting and the recommendations that were there. So what are the options for that response, especially when it comes to the State Regulatory Board that now has a father of murdered Marjorie Stoneman Douglas student as a member?
Right. I mean, I think it's important to think about, like we just heard in that interview, you know, obviously Andrew Pollack has very strong feelings about Robert Runcie. Frankly, he blames him for his daughter's mm-hmm. death. And, you know, I asked him, like, do you think you can be objective? Mm-hmm. And he said yes, but it's hard to believe that that is possible. And obviously I have so much sympathy and compassion for Andrew Pollack and his situation. But Broward Schools is the second largest school district in the state. And I think it's really unusual and potentially really could create some difficult situations to have someone on the state board who feels so strongly against the superintendent continuing. But as for the commission report, you know, moving forward, like Superintendent Runcie said yesterday, here are some of the recommendations that they made that we've already put into place. They're moving forward with establishing what's called hard corners. So those are safe areas in a classroom where students will be out of the line of sight of someone looking through a window. Obviously, during the shooting, mm-hmm. the confessed shooter was shooting through the windows, and that's how some students died. But going forward, you know, how to implement the recommendations from the commission and to respond to the findings of the commission is going to be in the hands of the legislature and Governor Ron DeSantis. Andrew Pollack is on DeSantis' transition team, and they had some conversations about how do we force school districts to comply. Maybe we tie compliance to school safety requirements into school grades. Maybe we even consider criminal charges for school officials that, you know, don't move forward. So obviously those are some extreme things. And also they're talking about police and increasing the police presence and giving police more authority over discipline to try to avoid what a lot of people have said is this culture of leniency where kids are getting away with.
And Pollack talked about that promise program and his a blaming part of it, part of the blame that he has for the death of his daughter and the situation that presented itself was partly on the Promise Program. Is there a role that that he is going to play? Is there a voice that he has with that type of program now that he has a chair on this Department of Education commission?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Department of Education puts through like the legislative budget request and they have an agenda. And so, of course, they can advocate for legislation. But also, you know, say the legislature does a bill that says, you know, you can't have a program like Promise or you know, here are the stipulations for diversionary programs that you can have, and then gives the State Board of Education a kind of broad discretion to stipulate exactly how that would go, then, you know, he could have an influence on that for sure.
Jessica Bakeman, covering education in South Florida for us here at WLRN. Jessica, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Tom.
We got lots more on the South Florida Roundup. Key West moving toward a partial ban on some types of sunscreens. Is this a choice between your skin and coral reefs? 800-743-WLRN, our telephone number. Sunscreen and the Keys up next. 800-743-9576 after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. South Florida certainly has its share of environmentally driven bans. Plastic straws, for instance, are regulated in parts of Broward County. Miami Beach will prohibit single-use straws and bags in certain areas of the city beginning February 1st. And now the city of Key West is taking steps that could lead to a ban on the sale of certain types of sunscreen. This sunscreen contains certain chemicals, and some studies have found these chemicals can harm corals. Key West would be the first place in the mainland U.S. to ban the sale of these sunscreens if it does take effect. Our southernmost reporter, Nancy Klinginer, is with us from the studios of Key West. Nan, welcome back to the Roundup. Tell us, first of all, the type of sunscreen involved in this potential ban.
They're very common sunscreens. If you look on the back of your bottle, you are more than likely to see these ingredients, and they are oxybenzone and octinoxate.
And common, like some of the normal store-bought brands that we would buy in drugstores on our way to the beach, that kind of thing?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've seen some industry literature that says I think 70% of sunscreens have these ingredients in them.
And what is the effort that the commission took this week, and what's the note behind it?
They approved on first reading an ordinance that would ban the sale of sunscreens with those two ingredients within city limits. It wouldn't take effect for a year, but to actually take effect, this ordinance would need to be approved on second reading. And several of the commissioners did express some concerns. They just wanted to move it along so that they could hear from some more folks and do some more research before the second reading.
So the fate is still uncertain as you move toward the second reading then.
That's right.
If it does pass, is it those who wear the sunscreen who would wind up potentially putting themselves into trouble with the law?
No. Okay. It's not going to be an issue where you're searched at the border, you know, coming into Key West or anything. Although we do have a great history of smuggling on this island.
It turns to be that, yeah, as well as defending your border sometimes, too, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It would just be the point of sale.
Okay, so it would be the retailers that are at risk in all this.
That's right.
And the motivation here has been pointed to some science showing that coral reefs are damaged by these chemicals in common sunscreen. How strong is that science? What does it tell us?
Well, the primary study was done back in 2015, and it was strong enough that the National Park Service actually recommends that you use what are called reef-friendly sunscreens if you're going to a coral area. The head of the South Florida program of the Nature Conservancy came and testified in favor of this ordinance, and they're not known as, you know, kind of wild-eyed lefties or anything like that. So I'd say it's considered fairly strong, but the industry is starting to push back very hard as well. We had a campaign of ads on YouTube targeting people in Key West, and then we had folks from the Personal Care Products Council and Johnson & Johnson came to the meeting in Key West and testified.
And what's their point? What are they concerned about? I mean, obviously concerned about sales, certainly, but how are they pushing back in terms of the science?
They are saying, first of all, the science, more research needs to be done, that the science isn't there yet. They're also saying that this is far from the major problem that coral reefs are facing, that coral bleaching and other damaging effects in coral are what's really causing problems there, and that sunscreen is not the major thing people should be focusing on.
And what about the dermatologist argument here, because, I mean, is this coral reefs versus skin protection?
Well, there are sunscreens that do not contain these ingredients.
Oh.
They're called mineral-based sunscreens. They have zinc oxide, titanium oxide, and there's a whole smaller industry of reef-friendly sunscreens that's growing up. And we had some folks from that industry who also came to Key West to testify. And some of these major companies make these sunscreens with mineral ingredients. The dermatologists say they're not as effective, and also that people don't like them, you know, that they're a little gloppier, that they make you look kind of white. And they say the most effective sunscreen is the sunscreen that people will use.
As opposed to the one that they won't use. Yeah. How do you find a reef-friendly sunscreen? Is there some kind of certification or label on it, or you just have to look at the ingredients?
Both.
Oh, okay.
There are some that are marketed that way. If you go to the website of the environmental group that started this whole thing in Key West, Reef Relief, you'll see a listing of types there. But you can also buy zinc-based sunscreens in any CVS and just go and take a look at the ingredients on the back of the bottle.
It's mentioned that this would be the first mainland ban in the United States of this type of sunscreen if the Key West Commission goes forward with it in the weeks and months ahead. Is that why do you think there's been so much attention? I mean, Key West, listen, the Keys aren't known for their beaches. A beautiful place, certainly, but not necessarily a place to get sand between your toes compared to, you know, the beaches on the mainland.
Right. But we do have, along the Florida Reef Tract, the only living coral barrier reef in the mainland U.S. So that's the issue, is the coral reef.
Right.
But I think they are pushing back so hard because they don't want to see a precedent set. Although you could argue that Hawaii already set one last year.
Turns out Hawaii is already in the United States, and we've seen a U.S. state go through this. What are the lessons learned there? What are, you know, what's the conversation between Key West and Hawaii as they try to look at what this ban has done there in Hawaii, which is in place, but yet hasn't taken effect yet, I don't think.
That's right. They left an even longer period of time before it actually takes effect. And our city attorney said quite forthrightly that ours was modeled very directly on theirs. So.
And did they talk about what, I mean, obviously they've seen no impact necessarily, but what about that pushback or how Hawaii was able to answer some of those concerns?
No, they didn't. They haven't really discussed that. Several of the commissioners want to do is hear from folks from Moat Marine Lab. They have a pretty significant coral research center here in the Keys and do coral nurseries. And they were actually cited by people on both sides of the argument on Tuesday night. So they're going to be in the hot seat, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't pick or choose the science, though. You got to pay attention to all of it. What's the timeline look like here, Nan?
Well, they haven't published the agenda for their next meeting, which will be the first Tuesday in February. So I'm not sure if they'll take it up again right away or take a little break to give themselves more time to do legal and scientific research.
And this obviously is entering the high season. Tell us about the beach conditions.
Well, you know, it seems cold to a local, but the tourists are happy.
Yeah, right.
It's the South Florida story.
Yeah, absolutely. Nancy Klinginer with us from our studios at the studios of Key West and our Southernmost Bureau. Nan, thanks so much for sharing the reporting with us here.
Thanks, Tom.
Finally on the roundup, sunscreen, not the only thing under scrutiny these days in the Keys. So are tiki huts. The city of Marathon is cracking down on unauthorized tikis. Now, inspectors have their eyes, they say, on about 10 of them, checking to see if they were put up with the proper permits. Now, I know there's some sticklers that may say these aren't tiki huts, they're chicky huts. Well, chicky is a Seminole word meaning home. Whatever you call them, the city of Marathon says you need to call them before you put one up in their city. That'll do it for the Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontato, our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations at WLRN is Peter J. Meritz. And the director of radio programming and technical supervisor this hour is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, supporting, and listening to WLRN. Have a great weekend.